Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You're listening to the midweek version of the Fiber Talk podcast, the twice weekly thing that we do for people who play with needles.
Yes.
And
no art this week, just needles.
Oh, no, we're just going to play with needles. Yeah, no art. No art. Mm-mm. Nope. All kinds of little things here. One, Nicola Parkman's event in at Sassy Jack's in August 18, 19, 20, and 21 is sold out. Yay.
Nice.
But there is a waiting list forming. So if you still want to go, jump on that waiting list at Sassy Jack's, just contact Kim at the store and she'll put you on the list and in case there are cancellations. And we'll be there. At least the 18th and 19th, that's when Marg and I will be there, and Christine's going to be there same days, or I don't know, maybe more. I don't know.
Probably.
So, yeah, so we'll be, hope we can do at least one show, maybe two, while we're there. So that'd be fun. And, yeah, so anyway, that's sold out, so good, so we won't have Nicola flying all the way over here and having empty seats. Yay.
That's good.
Yes, we'll take it. Let's see, what else? Oh, we broke the deal. Heather at Imperfectly Perfect Stitcher Needle Minders on Etsy needs a break from making. She needs a break from making needle minders.
Ah, fantastic.
So, I got to believe she'll take orders. I can't believe she'd turn down orders, particularly if you couple them with other things. But she's going to take a break. She's got school and other things going on. And this walk is sometime in the fall. So we'll come back when they're ready to go again and make needle minders and let you know about that. But, I'm pretty sure if you said, Heather, hey, I'd like to buy them when you start making them again, here's my order, that she'd be happy to take that. But she had to take a break. Let's see, Michelle Garrett's contribution. Now, the most she had was last year, $825.
Mm-hmm.
That was her second year.
Okay.
She's already at $1,870 and had to raise her her goal to $2,500. And what happened was that somebody came along and said to her here in the last couple 3 days, how much money do you have? I want to double it.
Ah, that's nice.
Yeah, so it got doubled. So she's at $1,870 right now, and we're taking a break with the needle miners. You can contribute. You can go to Michelle Garrett's blog post and or blog site, and you can contribute, just contribute money like you would to any fundraiser. And then she's going to have a de-stash sale on YouTube in late July. So if you follow her on FlossTube, you'll know about that. And all that money will go to the walk, to the Alzheimer's fundraising. And then she said that they do expect to start doing needle minders again in the in a couple of months, I think. So as soon as we know about that, we'll let you know. And even so, Imperfectly Perfect Stitcher there, Heather, go to her Etsy site. What did I buy? Three?
The moths.
Yes, the moths. Yes.
They're really cool. I like those.
So, yeah, she's more than happy to sell you needle minders. That's not a problem. So, but yeah, she needs a break. So we did the thing here.
We broke Michelle.
Yeah. Broke Michelle, broke Heather. We broke the whole system. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, so don't give up on that. And Michelle will be happy to have contributions in general. And then her de-stash sale, I got to believe that'll be quite a pile of things to purchase from her, because I think she gets stuff sent to her all the time and is quite a collector. So you'll want to watch for that. Yep. So that's good. So yay, we helped raise some money. So good for that. Yep.
Yeah. Next time we need a metric, though. We need to have people put in a note that they came from Fiber Talk.
Yes.
I think we should do that.
Yes. Yes. Heard about it from us. Yes. That'd be nice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, I do know from what Michelle said that when we started talking about it, things went crazy for Heather. So.
I'm really glad about that.
Yeah. Sorry, Heather, but not really. Raise some money for Alzheimer's. That's a good thing. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. What else? Oh, I wanted to share Nicola Parkman, Hands Across the Sea Samplers. You know, this is where, you know, I think a lot of people at some point who do not get involved with samplers go, what's the big deal? And when you look at these things in the history, to me, that's what makes them exciting. Because otherwise, I mean, they're interesting cross-stitch, but it's the history. So Nicola posted this little story that I'll just flat read here to you. Just a couple days ago, she posted it, where she says, I truly believe the samplers find you. A few weeks ago, I took some antique samplers to my framer for the frames to be restored. A week later, my framer rang me about Elizabeth Moore, which is one of the samplers. On the back of the frame, there was a very old note that contained some information about Elizabeth, the man she went on to marry, and the children they had. Where she lived on the other side of England to Nicola and her framer. Her husband's name was the same as many of my framer's ancestors. When Nicola went to pick up the samplers, her framer told her that he had been in contact with a cousin who was the family's record keeper, and he had confirmed that Elizabeth was his several times great-grandmother.
Wow.
Needless to say, I had to leave the sampler with him. Elizabeth had found her several times great-grandson. How cool is that?
That is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine that, though. You know, what are the odds of all that coming together? Jeez.
And that someone would have written all that information on the back like that.
Right.
You know, that is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, and it made me think because when I did that, the video with Gene Lee of the Attic over the Sarah Brazier sampler,
mm-hmm.
that you can see it. WeTalkFiber.com/SarahB. She suggested that because I asked her about putting names on.
Yeah.
Samplers, because seems to me that if you do a sampler like that, where are you going to put your name that doesn't kind of intrude on the design? And I have mm-hmm. I have that trouble with all of them.
Yeah, I think this conversation should apply not just to samplers but to all right. needlework, everything you do, right?
Right. It's a problem for me on everything, needlepoint, everything. I just like I think on embroidery, like service embroidery, it's a little easier because you tend to have blank spaces, but a lot of the counted needlepoint stuff is just full.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I don't want to leave out, like some people will leave out a little section of a stitch and put their initials in. And I don't want to leave that out. So it's a real problem for me. Yeah. I struggle with that.
So, but here, you know, when we talked to Mary Corbett about buying old frames that had someone else's needlework in it and taking their needlework out and using the frame and recycling or upcycling, whatever the word du jour is. I kind of like this idea though. So it, you know, when you have a surface embroidery, you certainly could initial something like anyone would sign a piece of artwork. But this idea that someone had taken the time to write on the back, I really like that idea because you know even for your own purposes. So forget about your ancestors. For your own purposes, to be able to, if you have a piece framed or however you have it finished, to take it down 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now and look at the back, how it's finished, and see, you know, you did this in this year, a note about what was going on at the time or where you were, or was it your first needlepoint piece or, you know, something, just anything to give the piece context. I think that would be really neat to do because for your own sort of growth, I think it's important and it would help you or if nothing else, it would give you some satisfaction to be able to go back over time. You know, when you go to refinish a room or do something and move the piece and you take it down and you see a little notes you've left for yourself and forgotten. I think that would be a really nice kind of surprise. But then for your children or grandchildren, or in this case, great, great, many times removed, for them to find a note that you've left for them, you know, unintentionally, how nice would that be?
Yeah.
So when you're doing the piece, you know, if you can't work it into the front, consider putting a note on the back. I kind of really like this idea, you know, and it's a private note. It doesn't have to be on the front. It doesn't have to be ostentatious, and you're not signing the piece with a big flourish or anything, but you're leaving your mark, and you're leaving something behind, so that if the piece, you know, does last for some time, and maybe it doesn't stay in your family, but it stays in someone's family, maybe it'll get traced back somewhere. Yeah. I think that's important.
I'm more inclined to think that too. And that was, I didn't finish the thought about Jean Lee. She suggested stitching some information outside of the design.
Yeah.
On the linen, but that would be the part that would get folded under or back, mm-hmm. and out of the frame. But when somebody pulled that off, they would be able to see your name and when you did it and those kinds of things. And but these are better ideas to me than messing up the design. And I shouldn't say messing up, than altering the design to get your initials in.
Mm-hmm. I think it's personal preference, and I can very much appreciate your, especially if you're working on something like Anasazi Song or you know, a piece that's accounted, a very symmetrical piece, you wouldn't want to disrupt the art of the piece, right?
Right.
And that makes perfect sense. But I really like the idea of giving the piece context and giving it a family.
Yeah. Because that Anasazi Song, now I'm in the final stages of that. And I have no idea where I would put my initials, and I really don't want to. I just don't want to alter that design. To me, I just don't want, because it would normally go, there's some Byzantine stitches on the sides, and mm-hmm. normally you would put it in the bottom corner, but I don't want to break up the zigzag look of those Byzantine stitches.
Right.
Just to put GP in there. You know, I just don't want to do it.
Well, I don't think you have to, though.
Yeah.
You know, because you know you stitched it.
Right.
But see, this is where I think even just signing it on the back of the frame,
yeah.
you know, or on the back of the canvas in some way is sufficient, or maybe both, you know, so that if it ever leaves its frame, you still have it signed with a date. But I would do your name, you know,
yeah.
if it was me. I don't know. But then I'm thinking about this and I'm like, I haven't signed anything. So, you know, I'm thinking about it as if I would do it. And then I think about all the things I've done and I haven't signed anything. So I think I would go back. Then again, I probably haven't framed anything either. So I really should get on that. but if I do, when I do, it's not like I'm not going to, I think I'm going to do that in some way, you know, because quilters do that all the time. You know, it's almost, you almost always do that. You stitch in on the back, like a little tag that has the, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, stitched lovingly by mom or something like that.
Right.
So there's always some sort of thing that you put on there. Now that I think about that, the quilt I made for my son when he was born doesn't have a tag on it either. So I totally... coming up with this grand idea that I've never done.
Well, you know, now that you talk about that in that context, I think about Vonna Pfeiffer, who mm-hmm. takes a little piece of cloth and puts her initials and date on it and then just glues that to the back. Now, there's no reason you couldn't stitch a piece of cloth with your name, date, and then just sew that right into the back of your stitching.
Yes.
That would work. But,
right, and for quilters, they actually print them. Like you can buy them. I know, like they used to get them at the quilt catalog places and things like that. But you can get them printed, like little tags.
Like a shirt tag.
Yes, that's what it was. It was when I was a child, and I'm sure you can still do this. When I was a child, my grandmother and I used to make clothing. She used to make all our clothes, and she taught me how to sew. And so then I used to make you know, a lot of clothing when I was, you know, a teenager and in college. But she used to put tags in our clothes. So I'm sure that you must be able to do that, that you can just get them done. Or if you know somebody that has an embroidery machine, you know, a programmable one, you could just do that. But I'm sure you could just have them made.
Yeah.
You know, stitched by, or you could, you know, it's not like we don't know how to embroider.
Right.
There is that.
Yep.
You could just get a piece of ribbon and just embroider.
You are allowed.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we don't have to overcomplicate things here.
Well, and you just gave me another idea. You just feed me all kinds of ideas, because my sewing machine will do basic embroidery lettering.
Oh, so there you go.
So I could just set that up on a piece of cloth and put my name and year and whatever else I wanted. And so it wouldn't take me hours of stitching.
No.
And then connect that to the back of the needlepoint, and then there would be at least a record.
Yes. And yeah. I like that, because it's neat. It's not going to come out, you know, it's not going to bleed. It's just once done. And then you could even just, you know, rip a bunch of those off really quick.
Right. Have a stack of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a stack, because I'm finishing stuff so fast. I'll need a stack. I'm just like lightning.
Well, you know, it strikes me though, too, like, because I'm doing the same thing. I'm finishing at a drastically slow pace, but I'm choosing all these gigantic pieces. You know, if I would stitch an ornament every once in a while, I would maybe finish something.
Yes. Yes. True. True. Yeah. I watch that, people who seem to finish a lot. And if you watch what they're finishing, you find that a lot of them are, they're just ripping off small stuff.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But, I want to like small things, or maybe I'm not looking in the right places to find smalls to do, you know?
Well,
like
that,
I need little portable pieces.
And that didn't come out right, because, you know, because doing small things, but it, you know, nothing wrong with that, and there's a lot of really cool ones. What I meant was, it can be demoralizing if you're not finishing stuff, and you see someone, oh, I finished this, and I finished this, and you think, wow, I can't keep up with that. You know, I can't do that many. And then, no, they're doing three or four things that added up are the size of the one thing you're doing, so you're no different. You're no different than them.
Okay, here, I'm going to twist this on you.
Oh, great.
Yes. Now you're gonna hate me. So the big pieces are the samplers and the big needlepoint pieces that you like, right? So here's the challenge, and it's going to be a challenge for both of us. The smalls are going to be the things that we don't know how to do. They're going to be our stretch pieces. So for me, that's going to be picking up a small piece of stump work, right? Because I haven't done any of that in a while. Uh-huh. And because those they make perfect little things that you could put in the top of a box, or they make beautiful ornaments. There's, you know, so many different little motifs that you could pull out of books and floral pieces and things like that. So that's a perfect tiny little piece to take with you.
Yep.
And for you, you were talking about doing the monograms and things like that as surface embroidery. So there you go. There's your smalls, because they're quick to do.
Okay. Okay.
And now you're forced to be pushed into something that you don't feel comfortable doing.
But it's not a monstrous something you don't feel comfortable
doing. But it's not a monstrous something. No. Right. And you can finish it. So it's something you can finish quickly. And it's something that you don't feel comfortable doing. And it's not, you know, there's no huge price of entry. So if you do it and you say, yeah, I don't really like how that came out, you trash it and you do something else.
Okay. I like that approach.
Or you hang it on the back of the Christmas tree.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Okay. We're going to stretch with small stuff. There's a
plan.
All
right. That's the challenge. That's the challenge. I'm going to set something up. It's going to be my summer take-along project. There you go.
Okay. I like that. All right. That's what we're going to do then. Anasazi Song. Our guest Sunday will be Carol Lake, designer of the Anasazi Song. Great conversation with her. Got some background on the Anasazi Song. Love that piece. I'm down to the last big section, the last two big sides. And then there's some fringe-like stitching on the top and bottom.
Before you start, for anybody that hasn't seen it, and then I'm going to ask a question, can you describe the colorway, and does it come in multiple colorways, or is it just planned out in one?
Well, it's planned out in one. You can do whatever you want. It's based on one over-dyed, I think it's Arabian Nights. Now, I'm already beyond what I'm informed. I think it's called Arabian Nights is the over-dye. I'm pretty sure that. And then all three of them, Song, Spirit, and Dream, Anasazi Song, Spirit, and Dream, are all based off of that one over-dye, and then she varies from that. They're vertical. It's a vertical piece, kind of a narrow vertical piece. And she only offers one colorway. But, you know, obviously you could do any number of things with it. But it's, I don't know, is it a foot tall? 6 inches wide? Something like that. A good challenge. Not, you know, it's not really the thing I'm enjoying about it is not big, but it's a good challenge. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm down to the last section now, and last big section, and then a little bit at the top and bottom, and then I'm done. And so I'm powering through. The problem with the last section is it's Byzantine stitches, and you're laying three threads of floss. So, and I'm being picky, and I'm tedious, but yes. We'll get there. The interesting thing about it and what has been a real challenge is anchoring the threads. And I'm obsessed with anchoring the threads, but it's a kind of a design where anchoring them so that you make sure you don't have any see-through because there's a lot of open space is a bit of a challenge. I've had to think about it quite a bit. And I really don't think there's an anchoring technique I haven't used on it through choice or through lack of choice. And I've got some spots where I have, two or three threads bar jello tucked in, and I don't dare put another one in because if I put the needle in, I fear I'll untuck something else. So, but it's been an interesting challenge in that. And, has tested me. Can I say I've been tested by beginning and ending threads? I think I have. I've had to plan those. So I've used the away knot, where I stitch over. I've used the away knot where I don't stitch over and come back and connect it in. I've used the L or T stitch. I've used the pin stitch. I've used the Bargello tuck like crazy. Several different ways of starting and anchoring just because of the way it's designed. And so far, I think there's only one spot where I'm not real happy. I feel like there's a show through, but I have to keep reminding myself I'm seeing that through my magnifier. I that's the other thing is I have to stop myself. Wait a minute. I'm studying this through a magnifier and nobody's going to see it that close. Yeah, I shouldn't really worry about it, but I do.
And once you back it, is anybody going to see it also?
What I'm saying? No, not the way I've done it, but you have to be careful because there is a lot of open space because there's a whole section on either side of the center core where you put these long lengths of crinic and then you do a darning weaving stitch over it. And over and under the crinic, the long lengths of crinic. And I had to be really careful about that. A couple times where I did not feel like it looked right, had to tear it out, start over. And it's been a fun challenge there because it's not dense. And so you can't just stitch blindly away and not worry about threads showing through. So, I'm thinking about doing a video and just cover it. And when I'm done and just cover, go over it, you know, close up and comment on where I struggled just might be fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. That means I'd have to actually do it, doesn't it?
Probably.
We'll see. But yeah, real good challenge, and I do think I'll do the other two. I think I'll do the song, the dream and the spirit, just to have all three. Because yeah, not real big lengthy projects, but really impressive looking. Lots of different threads. There's some flare in there, which will test your metal. Nice stitches, double fan doubled.
Those are beautiful.
Yeah, Jessica's. Yeah, those were fun. Yeah, those are really fun. And she does a neat thing with them because they're number eight pearl, I think it is. But it's a silk pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And then the that you do the double fan doubled, and then you leave the last round, and you stitch the last round, which amounts to four stitches, with a crinic. So each of the double fan doubled, the one side of the blade is a crinic. It's a really neat effect.
Yeah. You talked about that before, and yeah. I looked it up, and it looks really beautiful.
Yeah. It's just a neat idea, because normally you wouldn't stop a double fan doubled till you were all done. But yeah, you stop just short, and then you put in the crinic in it. And then there's a crinic X behind it. So there's sparkle throughout. And I was photographing it for the Needlepoint Nation weekly update yesterday. And put my light to the side. And I think I was able to get some of the crinic, at least some of it, to show a little sparkle. But there's she really has a lot of crinic thread throughout it. And it really adds a nice little flair to it, little mm-hmm. flavor. Yeah. Yep. It's a good design. Really nice. Nice challenge. I like it. But, I say a nice challenge, but I would suggest a nice challenge, but not overwhelming. Because
yes.
the difficult parts, and double fan doubled, are not difficult. Once you, figure out how to do them, they're really quite simple. But it's not like you have to do a lot of them. You only do four of them, and they're good sized. So it's not like you're cramped with them. And they're only one color, so you don't have to change colors. Because a lot of double fan doubled, they'll have two blades, one color, and two blades, the other color. And these are all one color, but you add the crinic. So it's not like, even if it's difficult, and I put that in quotes, it isn't so much that you go, oh, geez, that's just overwhelming. You do four of those things, and you're done, and they're just gorgeous. And, yeah, it's a nice piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really pretty.
Yep. So, but it's been a good test for beginning and ending threads. Definitely has. Yep. Have enjoyed it. Let's see what else we got going on here. And speaking of the beginning and ending of threads, there was a while ago at the Jane Wood Chili Hollow blog, she did a list. I'll put a link for this. She did a whole list of Pat Thompson at Hillside Needlepoint, Jane connected with that, different ways to begin and end. And it was a real nice rundown of how to start and end stitches. And then Debbie Rowley has a good video on beginning and ending stitches, the L or pin stitch, Bargello tuck, mm-hmm. and away knots, yeah, both in and out of path. And so she has a really good a video on that too. So I'll put links for those. Cause if for people who have trouble or who just simply don't only know one way, there's so many ways to start and end stitches and end threads. I shouldn't say stitches, but start and end threads. There's so many ways and they're all useful in their own, in the right spot and can save you a lot of hassle and then make sure that things are anchored properly on the backside. So,
yeah, I think that was probably one of the things that was game-changing for me was because I only learned, I think I only, when I was a kid, knew how to start with a knot on the back. And then the only way I knew how to end a stitch was really what you're calling a Bargello tut, which was to me just run it under the stitches. That's all I knew. And then so then the idea of a way knot was like, wow. I never thought to do that. And then the pin stitch was the next, like, ooh, that's a game changer.
Right.
So And then you do those, and then all of a sudden everything just becomes open, and a lot of things that look clumsy are no longer clumsy. Now suddenly your work has some finesse, and you're able to do things where you look at other work and you're like, how do you get it so neat looking? And you know, where there's not shadows behind it, and now you realize, oh, okay, these couple of little techniques make all the difference.
And that's what it is. It's the little things, and I've mentioned that more than once. These little things that people do, that veterans who've been doing this forever know, these little tiny tricks that either make it easier or make it better or both. And yeah, just little tricks that if you stitch for a while and talk to enough people, you'll pick up. Those little things, and they really do, they make a difference. And I tell you, having this list, just if you go to the link for Jane Wood's blog and the list that Pat Thompson put together of how to end and begin things, and then look at Debbie Rowley's video, it will arm you with several options, and you'll not feel constrained or frustrated again with starting and ending. And so, sometimes it takes time. It takes a little bit of thought. At least it does for me. I don't know, maybe I'm just weird, but it takes a little bit of thought. Where am I going to start this and end it? Or if I'm going to do a way knot, where am I going to anchor it, and how much thread do I need to leave to make sure I have enough to anchor when I'm done? You have to stop and think about it a little bit. At least I do. But once you do, then it comes together. Now, for instance, this Byzantine stitch on the either side of the Anasazi song, Carol suggests that it's a variegated thread, Threadworks. It's a Threadworks thread, and she suggests that you take a length of six strand length and pull three. Pull all of them, but keep three together and three together, and keep them in the same order. Like keep the all the ends in the same direction. I'm doing not explaining this well, but anyway, then what she suggests is you stitch the left side with three of them as far as it goes, and then you stitch the right side.
So it's symmetrical.
So it's symmetrical or semi-symmetrical. Yes. And it really is a neat effect. And so you have to stop and think about which end am I gonna start stitching with so that it matches up the other. And so far, I've only done a couple of lengths, and they matched up pretty close. So I was pretty pleased with that. But that was another play for using variegated thread, overdyed thread, was to use that technique to keep a symmetry and retain that variegation, and that's going to go all the way top to bottom on this piece. So
That's neat.
if I'm able to do it effectively, I won't do it as well as Carol did, I guarantee you that, but if I'm able to do it fairly close, it then gives a nice look and a nice outer frame for this piece. And it's a neat thing, but again, you have to stop and think. So like I'll pull all six, separate all six strands, and then I lay three down somewhere where they won't get disturbed.
Right, make sure you pick up the right end.
Right, exactly. And oh yeah, that too. And last night I ended up analyzing threads under the magnifier because I wasn't sure I picked up the right end. So it was like gotta mark it. So it's just fun. It's a good one. It really is a good one, and has a lot of dimensions to it that you end up with a beautiful piece, but I think you also learn a lot as you go through it. And to me, that's as much fun as actually stitching the thing, is learning things just to get the job done.
Those are, I think those are good pieces.
Yeah, they really are. And they're attractive. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful when it's done. I can't really am anxious to have it done and framed because it's going to look very striking on the wall. So go, Carol. Yay. Do more of that stuff. Go do more of that. Well, I've done three and you've only done one.
Yeah, but you have to collect your stash.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I got to have 10 more than I can actually do.
Right. Otherwise, it's not satisfying.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah. So anyway, I'll put the links up so people can find that. And then, you know, there was another thing, and this complete left turn here. And we talked about it. We talked about it last week with Mary Corbett at the end of the piece about getting the podcasts and mm-hmm. and you know, people not knowing where they are. And I just repeat again, just go to wetalkfiber.com and there's a page for every one of these shows. And you can just listen right there. There's a player there. You click on the little arrow thing and it plays. But the real easy way is to your podcast app in your phone or your tablet or whatever. Just go there and subscribe to, just search for Fiber Talk and subscribe and you'll find it. And then it's automatically fed to you. You don't have to do anything. And we were, this past weekend, we drove to St. Louis and back. So that's, 11 hours worth of driving. And listen to Mark Maron podcast the whole way. And that's all that was on in the car. We just listened to podcasts. Finally, the last hour, it's like, all right, enough of these. Got to stop. but you know, they build up, and then you have a trip, or if you commute back and forth to work, you know, it's something to listen to. And, yeah.
It's fun to listen to them with somebody, too, because you can talk about them.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Music you don't tend to talk about with someone, but a podcast you kind of do.
Right, yeah. You can comment, stop it and comment, whatever it
mm-hmm.
might be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and I know a lot of people listen to Fiber Talk. They'll catch up while they're in the car on a trip or something.
Yeah.
And I have to say, more than once, I've listened to us because when we have a guest, you know, you're always trying to make sure we have a next item to talk about, next question or something.
Right, right. And then you catch up, and because there's things that that we are learning as we go, and then you forgot the
right.
thing that you wanted to remember to learn.
So that's the easiest way. It really is to do it on an app. And then if you're a FlossTube person, we put the same videos up, or put the same things up as FlossTube videos. And there's, you know, it's not Talking Heads like a standard FlossTube, and we aren't sitting there at a table holding up things we bought or finished.
Right. So you don't have to look. You can stitch
right.
at the same time.
Yeah. Because that's the whole concept behind the podcast, is that you can stitch and you don't have to watch anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can just listen. And, yeah, there are times when it'd be really nice if we could hold up a picture. But, hey, sorry. Can't do everything.
No.
Can't do everything.
Nope.
Yep. So I got apparently the logjam of linen has been broken.
Ah. Okay. So
yeah.
You have a purchase?
Yes. Yeah, Sassy Jack's, several people reporting that they were getting their linen for Sarah Brazier last week.
Great.
And I had a banner day at the mail room, or at the mail. So the mail, I heard the mail, and I heard something get flopped down on the porch. Well, I bought a DMC color card with the actual threads.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that was coming, and I was excited to have that. Boy, that's nice. That's worth it. Because I had, the old one I had was pictures.
Not
the same.
How many threads is the DMC thread card?
A lot.
A lot. Because I have the Krynek one, which is invaluable. It is tremendous. What a resource that is. Because, you know, like DMC, I can kind of go to a store and see a large array. But Krynek, there's nowhere around me that has that, so there's no way for me to see. So to
yes.
have the color card is a tremendous resource. So I can only imagine to have the DMC.
I think if you unfold it, if I recall correctly, it's like 8.5 by 11 roughly per page. I think there are six, if you unfold it all the way, I think there are six faces with threads
mm-hmm.
on them. I think that's what it is. Yeah, it's a lot. And it's just fun to look at because it's just every color in the rainbow and then some. Yeah. So anyway, so I knew that was coming, but there was a second package laying out there, and I was not expecting anything else. Well, that second package was from Sassy Jack's. It was my 40-count platinum linen.
Very nice.
And all the AVAS silks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes! Yes.
So you're ready.
Yes. It was so nice. It just opened that up and laid out the linen on the dining room table, and then got all the silks out and all the nice little shades, and it was beautiful. Yep.
So you're happy with the linen color?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I laid them right on top of it, and yeah, good I'm going to be yeah. Yeah, I'm really happy. That's a big sucker. Boy, that's
Oh, I know. I know. I bought a yard, right? So that I've been dyeing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cut it down because I still want to make sort of a doodle cloth piece so that I can kind of muck around with that just on a hoop. And as I go through my dyeing adventures, each time I look at this piece and I think, oh gosh, I got to stitch this whole thing. It is a large piece.
Yep. Well, my first thought was, oh no, is it going to fit on my 36-inch scroll rods?
Oh, yeah, right.
Because it just seemed too big. So I went right downstairs to my stitching corner and got out those rods. Oh, yeah, it'll fit just fine with room to spare. So, okay, that was close. Because it's a lot bigger than you think.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I remind myself it's bigger than you think, but we're not stitching it solid.
You know? No.
So, yeah, but it's still big. Man, it's gigantic. It's going to be great. But it's going to be impressive.
So I think mine is dyed.
Oh, okay.
I think it's done. So
dark enough to satisfy you?
It's dark enough. It's dark enough. So a lot of people actually chimed in and helped out. So I'm very grateful to all those people. Because it's funny how you get involved in something and then you get frustrated and stubborn and you forget all the things that you know or that you're supposed to know.
Yep.
So,
sure.
I'm dying this and I'm getting into the chemistry and people are reminding me of things and I'm like, oh, of course I should have thought of that. And then someone very smart said, you know, you could add some black to it, to the blue. And I thought, cause you want it darker, dummy. So I bought some more blue and I bought some black and I used, half as much black as blue and dyed it again. And it came out much better. So it's not as dark as I wanted it, but I think it's as dark as I need it. And looking at it now, and I could be rationalizing it, and that's fine. I'll accept that. It's by the end of the piece, I will be saying this is as dark as it should be because my eyeballs will be thanking me because if I went any darker, I would need 300-watt bulbs to be able to see it because it's, 36-count linen. And this piece that I'm stitching now is the Debbie Rowley Black Magic piece, which is, I think, I want to say 18 or 20 count.
Probably 18.
Canvas.
Yeah, 18.
Yeah, 18 count. Mm-hmm. And that's a struggle. So if I dyed this that dark, I would want to stab myself in the face with needles by the time I was done. So... It is about the color of like a pair of medium dark blue jeans. And I think that's going to be just perfect.
Okay.
So I'm thinking about it in terms of what I had in my head, but then I have to look at this in terms of compared to what everyone else is stitching on. And it is still completely 100% totally different.
Okay.
Which was kind of the goal. You know,
yes.
I just wanted to flip the colors upside down. So instead of it being a light background, it's sort of a dark background and it's blue instead of sort of because the color of the background in the piece is almost, well, everybody seems to be using the, like a khaki, but it's not really a khaki. It's almost I don't know what you would call that color, but it's more towards a yellowish, I would say, right?
Yeah.
Not yellow, but
yeah.
Yeah. Like a bone color, right?
Yeah.
So blue's sort of on the opposite side of the color wheel. So Yeah, so I think it's going to work. I think, or it will completely fail. But it will definitely succeed in the goal of looking completely different than everything else, which was the ultimate goal. Whether it will be attractive or not is really a secondary goal, because that's really what I wanted to do, was to see what would happen if we stitch this in a completely unconventional way.
Sure.
So the first part is done, and I'm happy with how it came out. It's very, very even. And the linen itself is still like really silky, and the hand is nice. So I'm gonna cut it down to size and keep the other piece in a hoop so I can mess around with it. I think I'm still kind of toying with the idea. I might just throw it all onto the frame, but I still think I want to keep a little piece to the side so I can just, use that as a small piece for testing out ideas. And because right now I think the thing I want to measure is with the border, it's a satin stitch, and I know people are experimenting with, one thread, two threads, and being as I'm going to do it probably with metallics and with two threads, I'm lazy and I don't want to lay them. So what I want to do is see if I can get away with not having to lay threads, and if I can just use a larger diameter thread instead. So like a number four Krynek or something like that. It's single strand, and then I don't have to lay thread. So that's basically what I want to experiment with, is kind of what thickness of threads I can use on that thread count, and see how they lay, and what kind of coverage I get, and that will dictate sort of what I do. It's going to be DMC and some blending filament, and I'm just going to kind of mess around with it. We'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah. So you were able to get the dye even. It doesn't look tie-dyed or anything.
Not at all. Nope.
Oh,
Nope.
good.
It is beautifully even. And I will say that it was not difficult to do that at all, because I was doing it in a little sort of rectangular bin, and the liquid did not cover the fabric at all. Like I would have had to put effort to make it uneven.
Oh, okay.
If I wanted it to get that mottled look that like a lot of the lakeside linens have, like the vintage looks, I would have had to try.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it was very, very easy to make it even. It would have been more difficult to make it vintage looking.
Yeah. 'Cause I wondered about that with the dark. If you
Nope.
would if it you would saturate more in some areas and reject in some, and if you'd end up with a
Nope, not
that's
at
great.
all. Not at all. And it, I worried about that, because you would think that the fabric would have to be completely submerged, and it was not at all. It was wet. It was all evenly wet, but half the fabric was out of the liquid, and I would flip it every once in a while,
Yeah.
but it was totally fine.
Terrific. This is a fun ride here. This, oh,
Yeah.
and someone suggested that I suggest to you that, and I know you're not doing your Krynek this way, but I thought it was a good idea that you can buy Krynek on not the little spools, but the big spindle things, the big, oh, can't think of the
Yes.
word. Can't think of the word. Anyway, those big
Yes.
spindle
So that
things.
you can write, so for embroidery, for like machine embroidery and things
Right,
like that.
right.
Yes.
So, yeah, suggested that you could do that, so I'm suggesting that to you. But then I also read someone else said that occasion that DMC is offered that way often, and that when it they see it on sale, and they mentioned that sometimes it's on sale at Joann's, that they buy white, and then I think it's 5200, that really ultra white. But they'll buy those rather than buying skeins and just have a big spindle of that of white, because you always need that and you always use it. And I thought that was a brilliant idea, because yeah, one of those would last you a long time.
Yes. So that's one thing that I looked into, not with Krynek. So that's a really good suggestion. So Gene Lee had recommended a different company for Metallics, which the name is escaping me for the moment. So I kind of went back and forth with this company to get a color card. And it turns out that they do the same thing. They do the large spools for embroidery machines so that you can do, machine programmed embroidery with Metallics.
Yeah.
And it turns out that their color card is for the spools. So I wrote to them to get a color card for those and then asked them, you know, because the numbering was different, if they had a conversion chart to the skeins. And it turned out that they said, no, they totally don't correlate at all. It's not even the same color. So I said, all right, well, that's not going to help me out. And the thing was, it wasn't going to end up being cost effective because by the time I bought a spool, it was going to be, in the end, it may end up being cost effective to do that. But the spool was so large that it wouldn't end up working out for me.
Oh, okay.
But with Krynek or with DMC, especially if I go local and find something, and that's one of the things I plan to do this week was to pop into Michael's and see if they have something like that, especially for any of the shades that are in the satin stitch in the border, if they had anything that was a metallic. Because, again, for this project, it's not like I'm teaching the piece where I want to do, you know, stick with a particular manufacturer or something like that. You know, for the figures and the motifs, I want to stick with the threads that I know. So I'm going to write down, okay, this is this, you know, this chronic blending filament and things like that. But the border, I'm perfectly willing to go with what's economical. So if I can find a giant spool of metallic something, and I know that I'll have enough of it and it's the same dye lot and it'll run the entire border and it won't cost me an arm and a leg, I will gladly do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes, that's an excellent suggestion.
Yep. No, I think the next time I see DMC white or that, I think it's 5200 is the really ultra white. If I had my handy thread card right in front of me, I could look that up, but I don't. I think I'm going to buy one. Just, you know, what harm is having that? It's not like it's going to rot or anything. So, yeah, good thing to have. Yep. All right. That's going to be it. That's all we got.
That's all we got today.
So Sunday, Carol Lake, thanks for listening. And we'll be back next Wednesday.
Take care.